Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello, everyone. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.5 in the Mattsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site, and you can find all of our episodes over on iTunes as well as on social media. Just search for Dog Works Radio. And calling in today is a musher that just finished the Bear Grease Marathon up in Minnesota a couple of weeks ago, and she has a heck of a story to tell. I'm looking forward to talking to her. Her name is Becky Hacker. Becky, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
I am doing well. Where are you calling in from today, Becky?
I'm actually just outside of Newberry, Michigan, and in the middle of a blizzard.
Well, at least you guys are getting snow down there. I think it's only snowed once or twice up here in the Mattsu Valley, so we're really feeling the crunch. I know they're going to announce later today where they're going to do Iditarod, whether it's going to be in Willow and Fairbanks. So I think it's going to be an interesting winter up here.
Yeah. I hear you guys haven't got much snow. And we actually got a late winter. I didn't get snow here in the UP until like the second week in January. So we're not complaining at all.
Well, you know, I had you on the show, I don't know, maybe a year or so ago, and we learned all about you and what you do. I know you work up here at Alaska Excursions in the summertime running tours for the tourists, I guess it would be a good way to put that. But if you could, introduce yourself, tell us, you know, where you mush from, how many dogs you have, that sort of thing.
Sure. My name is Becky Hacker, and I am a certified veterinary technician. That's how I got started in the sport about 13 years ago. I volunteered for vet teams and caught the mushing bug a little bit harder than some. I started running dogs about 3 years ago now. My kennel is Dream Big Kennel, and right now I have 19 dogs. It doesn't take long for them to... I don't even want to say accumulate, but to start putting together a team.
Right.
And, my focus right now is getting qualified to run Iditarod. Last year I did the UP 200 as the short qualifier, and, yeah, I just finished the John Bear Grease Marathon last week as one of my 300-mile qualifiers.
You know, I saw on your Facebook page that your second 300 qualifier was canceled. That seems to be a recurring theme around here, at least in terms of our kennel. We've signed up for races every year, and for whatever reason, one or two are always canceled. We signed up for the Connect this year, and it was canceled. And My goodness, it's a tough time to try to qualify for Iditarod, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, the thing is, it's one of those things that was a last-minute cancellation. It's supposed to be next weekend. If I had known it was going to be canceled, I'd actually be out at Race to the Sky in Montana right now because that is the only other 300-mile qualifier that is still on. Canadian Challenge got canceled, you know, up in Saskatchewan, and Yukon Quest 300 is already over. So, I was hoping to get qualified this year so I could just focus on putting my team together next year, but it's kind of like mushing. You plan A, and you have B, C, D, and E ready to go because you know that it's just one of those things. So
it is. But your plan is still to finish that last 300 miler next year, then run in 2018. Is that right?
Yeah, as long as everything goes well, I want to do the Bear Grease again, and then I'll head on out to Montana right afterwards to do Race to the Sky. My kennel is actually, I'll have a pretty solid team. The oldest dog I have will be five. I have a couple puppies that'll be 2 year old. I had 2 yearlings that actually finished Bear Grease with me this last season. So they'll be, them and the other two siblings, I think, will be nice and ready for longer races. And in 2018, they'll be perfect, you know, 3 year olds. So, yeah, I have a young team, but I've been very selective with my breeding, and they're good dogs. They're really good dogs.
Good stuff for sure. You know, we have a lot of questions about the qualifying process from our listeners, and I was wondering if you could answer a question for us. Are you able
sure.
to do the same race twice to consider as a qualifier, or do you have to do different races? So could you do the Bear Grease twice for the 300s or no?
You know, that is one question that I want to clarify, because it does not say that you can't do that. It just says that you have to have 2 300-mile qualifiers. I need to call up Ty Ditterod. I want to make sure they get my paperwork from Bear Grease anyway, just to clarify. But I do want to do the Race to the Sky anyways. That was kind of on my race plan for next year. So I'll just, you know, use it as a qualifier. I'll probably use Bear Grease, the marathon, as a qualifier again as well, just to be sure. You know, you can never have too many. And
right.
But it is something that I do want to clarify, because if you read the rules in Iditarod, it does not say that you can only use one race once.
Right. So you had mentioned that you have 19 dogs, which is a relatively small kennel to be running bigger races like the Bear Grease, Race to the Sky, and then eventually Iditarod. How do you manage with such a small team? I'm sure the selection process becomes a little difficult if one or two gets injured.
It really does. I'm very cautious, and I don't want to say cautious. I'm very careful in my training. I know some of these guys with larger kennels, you know, they even having 25 dogs, you do have a little bit of a cushion if you have an injury or a dog that's maybe just not performing up to your standards. When I am either buying a dog or breeding a dog, I have to make sure that it is exactly what I'm looking for. Right now, all the litters of puppies that I've had all are performing exactly as I'm expecting. So I'm really happy there. I also have to be realistic in my goals. I'm not going to win these races, not with this small of a kennel, not at this stage. I've only been doing this for a couple years. My goal is to finish and do as well as I can with the dogs that I have, and finish with a happy team, and a happy musher. That is my main goal, while still being competitive. Yeah, so it's just being realistic in, you know, realizing I only have 19 dogs, and I'm trying to run, you know, a dog race that requires 14 or 16 dogs. Just being realistic.
Right. Are you finding yourself, I'm unsure of what races you've done besides Bear Grease, but have you found yourself entering smaller teams, you know, a 10-dog team and a 12-dog race, that sort of thing, because of your limits with dogs, or no?
I have not had to do that yet. I am working last winter and this winter with Alcan Kennels out of McMillan, Michigan here. So I've been able to borrow a couple older dogs. So I have been able to run the races. I ran the UP 200 last year with a 12-dog team, and I did run Bear Grease this year with a 14-dog team. And next year, I will. I should be able to use all of my own dogs. Buying a couple, and I've got an eye on a couple dogs or a couple mushers that I would like to get some dogs from. So it's kind of one of those mushing things. You can never have too many dogs.
No, you can't. And like you said, they multiply very quickly if you aren't careful, and not through breeding. They just seem to find their way into your yard very quickly. So let's jump into the
yes.
story that we wanted to talk about today. I followed your race pretty closely because they had excellent updates during the Bear Grease. And, you know, those races that are, you know, sort of in civilization, so to speak, unlike Iditarod
mm-hmm.
and the Quest, they're a little easier
right.
to follow in terms of getting updates from handlers and that sort of thing. So I want to jump into this because you've got an awesome story. And let's just jump right into it. It's my
sure.
understanding that this is the first time that you'd ever been behind a 14-dog team in a race. Is that correct?
It's actually the first time I've been behind a 14-dog on a sled ever.
Wow.
I ran 12 dogs. I never, ever really had a purpose to hook up 14. I'd, you know, if I'm training 24, I'd run two 12-dog teams. So I was like, well, this is the time to do it because there's a lot of people. If I lose the team, you know, they can stop it. And from what I've heard, you know, from people running the Bear Grease, you want 14 dogs because of the hills, and I totally agree with them now. There's a lot of, you know, adding those two extra dogs, there's a lot of dog power there. Luckily, my dogs, I've worked really hard with them on behavior-wise, so they're not too out of control, let's put it that way.
Right. So can you give us a primer of what the race is like? How many miles is it? What is the terrain like? What is a typical time to run the race? Just some particulars about the race in general, because it's one of those races people hear about, but they don't know about.
Sure. So it is, it's held in Minnesota at the end of January every year. Unless Mother Nature does not cooperate with snow conditions. And it takes place basically on the North Shore, a snowmobile trail. It is literally all snowmobile trail. Except for coming into a few checkpoints. The longest leg this year was 55 miles, and then the shortest leg was 30. And there are checkpoints along the way that are accessible by road and by handlers. It is a handled race except for the one checkpoint Sawbill upbound, and that's what makes it an Iditarod qualifier. So at that checkpoint, handlers are not allowed at all, not even to spectate, just to, eliminate any of that. We have to do everything ourselves, which a lot of us are used to anyway. This year, the mileage was 383 miles. It does change a little bit every year depending on trail. They eliminated a checkpoint, but added a checkpoint. So that did add up a little bit of mileage, but we started outside of Duluth instead of in Duluth, but ended in Duluth. So, you know, every year is just a little bit different, but the same checkpoints come on as, supporting the race. The terrain is insane. I have heard about the hills, but until you actually get out there and are running it behind your dogs, you do not understand how many hills there are. The first part was not too more into the Sawtooth Mountains, and it is uphill, downhill, uphill, down. I mean, it is constant. They're not little hills. They're rolling hills. They're not mountains, but they're hills. And it's something you have to manage your team, because if you come charging down those hills, you're going to, have a lot of injuries to yourself and your dog. So, but it's absolutely gorgeous. I can't wait to do it again.
So it runs up and back, right, from Duluth to, is it Grand Marais or Grand Portage?
Grand Portage is where we went to this year.
Okay.
And it is an up and back, correct, yep.
And the winner, Nathan Schroeder, he's a three-time champ, I believe. Do you know how
Awesome. Yeah,
To finish?
He, let's see, we all started, the first team was out at 11 on Sunday, and he finished at 5:30 Wednesday morning. So, like 13 hours
four,
into me.
4.5 days?
about 3.5, yeah.
3.5. And when did you finish? You were the Red Lantern winner, and everybody wants to know what that means. How long did it take you to finish?
I finished on a Wednesday at 8:18 p.m. I had 39 hours on the trail, and I did take 31 hours of rest.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Is there a mandatory amount of rest in terms of hours for this?
There is. It is 28 hours that you have to take, and I actually ended up taking a little bit more rest because of, for me, I did injure my shoulder about 100 miles into the, not even 100 miles, like 80 miles into the race. And I almost scratched at Trail Center because I didn't know if I broke my collarbone or separated my shoulder. I mean, it was a pretty significant injury. but after a nap and talking with another musher who happens to be an orthopedic surgeon.
Awesome.
And my hand, and my handlers, you know, helping me to determine if I could, in fact, take care of the team if something happened out there, dealing with the pain. You know, it was kind of one of those things that we'll go checkpoint to checkpoint and see how it goes, and I finished. So the extra rest actually was because of me and not the dogs.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about that injury. We're talking to Becky Hacker today. She's the Red Lantern winner for this year's John Berger's Marathon up in Minnesota. You know, in your race recap, you spend a lot of time talking about the injury because it can be very significant. And, you know, those shoulder, collarbone, arm injuries are definitely a game changer when you're out there on the trail because, you know, with a broken wing, so to speak, it's very difficult for you not only to manage your chores, but also manage the sled, especially if there's up and downs a lot. So how did the injury happen? And you had mentioned, you know, you got it checked out and, you know, figured out a way to work your way through it. But what were you thinking during that whole, you know, 280-odd miles you had to go with a busted-up arm?
Well, the injury happened. It's just one of those things. We crash. You know, you come around a corner. I happened to be coming out of Sawbell, which is the second checkpoint and the unassisted checkpoint. After about 5 hours of rest, so my team actually was doing really well. They were on fire. I was really happy. Came up to a 90-degree turn, which happened to turn onto a plowed road with a little bit of a berm, which typically is not that big of a deal. But my boot got caught kind of in my drag pad, caught on the runner, and I wasn't able to right the sled. Kind of went airborne, came down on my left shoulder, outstretched, and came down pretty hard. It was a quick left to get back on the trail. The dogs followed the trail, and I could hook in and kind of figure out what happened. It was one of those pains that makes you want to vomit. It hurt so bad. But the problem was I didn't want to turn around and go back to the checkpoint. I'm like, there's got to be a road crossing or something, and I'm just going to have to scratch. But the dogs were doing so well, and I kind of managed the pain. When I'm running, I don't use my left hand very much anyway, so I basically just stuck it in my pocket and used my parka as a sling. There was a couple road crossings, but the dogs, like I said, they were looking so good that I couldn't do it to them. I couldn't do it. So I'm like, oh, I'll get to trail center, and, you know, a friend of mine told me never scratch without taking a nap. So that was kind of my goal, was just to get to the checkpoint, you know, talk to my handlers, who are very good friends of mine, and take a nap and kind of decide and move forward. I did manage ibuprofen for pain meds, and it was one of those things. My handler would hand me ibuprofen and a Gatorade. I'd come into a checkpoint. I'd leave a checkpoint. She'd hand me Gatorade and ibuprofen, so it was a very regular schedule. That helped a lot. I also did talk to the officials because I am using this as an Iditarod qualifier, and they want me to do as much as I can by myself. And, you know, to be honest, if I was on Iditarod, I probably would have had to scratch. But I was part of the team. I mean, it's very important for me to be part of the dog care, and I did as much as I could. But my handlers are really, you know, very, very huge part of what happened and how I and the reason that I could finish.
So you had mentioned that there was one unsupported checkpoint, and, you know, there's a discussion going on right now on one of the pretty active Facebook pages about these unassisted races, and that unassisted checkpoint just so happened to be the checkpoint where you were injured. Is that right?
Correct. Thing by myself, and I've been dealing with dogs for 13 years, and, you know, I do everything by myself. That's not a problem. It was just, I mean, if I had to do everything by myself, I would have had to scratch. And, you know, to be honest, the races that have handlers, I don't think they're a good qualifier to run Iditarod. You have one checkpoint, and then you get to rely on your handlers for the rest of it.
Right.
That's my opinion. You know, I'm thankful that they are, you know, Iditarod qualifiers, because otherwise I would have to travel to Alaska to do that. But going 1,000, you know, or 1,100 miles or whatever the trail is for Iditarod by yourself, having one unassisted checkpoint, there's a lot of people that should not be, you know, qualified based on one checkpoint.
Right.
In my opinion. And that's my opinion.
We've talked a lot about that here on this show, and, you know, everybody has a little bit different opinion. So I guess my next question to this is, on your recap, you were talking about one of your bigger dogs had a sore shoulder, sore wrist, something I don't remember,
mm-hmm.
and you were contemplating out there on the trail, oh, my goodness, I'm injured, and I've got to load this big dog, and, you know, I don't know what we're supposed to do, and, you know, you're contemplating it back and forth on your recap. Kind of take us through that moment, if you could, about figuring out some pretty, I don't know, scary logistics out there with, you know, being out there and having to load a dog, and you didn't know if it was even possible.
Yeah, you know, I was pretty sure I was pretty close to the checkpoint. And poor Rocky, he's a big 65-pound wheel dog, got sucked into soft snow on a corner and did tweak his shoulder a little bit. He was still pulling. His gait was just off a little bit. And he is, like I said, he is the biggest dog on my team. He wasn't giving up. He wasn't, you know, necklining or showing me that he wasn't able to pull. That's just his personality. I debated on bagging him, but he's horrible, horrible in the bag. He probably would have ate his way out. That's
right.
His personality. But, you know, if there was, that was my main concern, is if there was, you know, a more significant injury where I did have to bag the dog, and, you know, keep them under control, would I be able to do it? And that's when I got into the checkpoint. That was one of my main concerns, because if anything happened to my dogs because of a bad decision that I had, I would feel horrible. I would never, ever forgive myself. But luckily, my handlers made me, one of my crazy dogs, Tofty, she's just nuts. They're like, put that dog in the bag. And she's been resting for 4 hours, and I'm like, oh, God, I knew they were going to make me do that. But I got her in there. She was very confused, but got her in there, got her under control while my handler was shaking the sled like, you know, if there was a team hook to it. And I was able to do it, so, you know, he determined that, yeah, I think I'll be all right, kind of move forward from there.
So when for folks that are listening that don't quite understand what we're talking about, typically when a dog is injured in between checkpoints, we'll put them in our sled bag, and they kind of get a piggyback ride to the next checkpoint. But often these dogs, even if they're injured, they don't want to stay in the bag, and they'll jump out and try to surf on top and, you know, really cause quite a bit of a ruckus doing, you know, doing that task. And a lot of times, Becky, and I'm sure you could back me up on this, many times we have to hold on to these guys, especially if we have a whole bunch of gear and things in the sled. We're sort of holding on to the dog with one hand and driving with the other. And it can make driving the sled rather difficult, especially if you're going up and down hills with a dog in the bag. Is that right?
Yes, very, very difficult. Because they don't want, I mean, that's kind of like their walk of shame. That's not, and they want to be on the line. They don't know, you know, they know they're injured, but it just does not matter to them. Trying to keep them in the bag is probably the most difficult. And with the hills, I was, you know, ski pulling to help the dogs up and down the hills. Luckily I did not have to do that with any of the dogs. But, you know, just one of those things you'd had to manage, or I would have had to manage if I had to do it.
Okay, so we only have a few minutes left here, Becky, and I want to make sure that we can finish up here. I want to know what the feeling was like, you know, those last few miles heading into that into the finish line. You know, you know you've accomplished things, and it's the longest race you've done. I'm sure you know that you know, that qualifier is now under your belt and you were successful. Take us through that last few miles. How did that feel to you? How did it look? What were the dogs doing? Because, you know, they really usually they'll speed up there as you get closer to the finish line. They'll, you know, kind of put it in sixth gear and really rock and roll.
Yep. Well, the last leg is very hilly. And it seems like you are going forever uphill. The last couple miles going into the finish, there was a downhill, and then it was fairly flat, and I was like, oh, finally. And, you know, I was very excited. I did cry a little bit because I was so happy that we made it. The dogs, they sped up a little bit, and there's one a major road crossing about a mile before the finish, and there was flashing lights and people cheering, and I'm like, oh my gosh, okay. And the dogs are kind of like, is this it? They cross the road and they kind of stopped and looked at me like, wow, okay, all right. I said, no, let's go, you guys. All right. So we go, and we started going up another hill, and they kind of stopped and were like, you've got to be kidding me. No,
right.
Cheered them, you know, I'm like, all right, guys, this is the last hill. And they're like, you've been saying that for, you know, you could tell they're just like, really? But coming into the checkpoint or the finish, I was very, I was so ecstatic and very surprised. I was several hours behind the musher that finished ahead of me, and like I said, about 14 hours behind Nathan, who did win. I was expecting my handlers and the volunteers that have to be there at the finish, and there was like 50 people there, and it was amazing. I had some of my very good friends showed up, and you know, ecstatic. I can't even tell you. It was a huge, proud moment for myself, and I did just a great accomplishment. Very, 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 very
awesome.
Happy. So, yeah.
What time of day was it when you finished?
It was 8:18 p.m. So in the evening.
You know, I don't know how many times I finish races at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's usually just my wife and the checker there. And you're going, oh, my God, I did this, but look who's here. 2 or 3 people are standing around because it's in the middle of the night. So luckily you felt you finished where there was able to be a crowd there, and I imagine that was a great motivator for you and a great motivator for the dogs. So my last question here before we go, Becky, tell us about the finisher's banquet. And it's my understanding you received an award, too?
I did. I got the Dan Zappa Sportsmanship Award, which is voted on by the mushers. And it left me speechless, to be honest. I'm very proud of that. Very, very proud.
You know, that's a coveted award because it is you are voted on by your fellow mushers. And it's interesting in mushing because we don't see each other on the trail. I'm sure with Nathan so far ahead, you probably didn't see him too often on the trail, did you?
No. Actually, it was funny going into the turnaround checkpoint at Mineral Center. I had on past with Ryan Anderson, Keith Eiley, Nathan Schroeder, you know, Jason Campo, Colleen Wall, and all of these past finishers who are very good friends of mine, and it was amazing. It was super cool. But I'm like, they're just leaving, and I'm just pulling in.
Hey, I've been there too, so I understand. But they voted you as the Sportsman Award, which, like I said, is usually a highly coveted award in any race, whether it's a qualifier
it
or a sprint race or whatever. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. You did receive
the Red Lantern as well, which is, you know, it's a sort of bittersweet award. You're happy to finish, but nobody wants too many Red Lanterns sitting on the trophy case, do they?
No, I figured, you know what, I'm going to get it out of the way. I got my Red Lantern now. it is, you know, finishing is winning to me. But I got that now, and I'm okay if I only have one.
Right. All right, Becky, we're just about out of time. Let people know how they can get in touch with you. Websites, are you on Facebook? You know, how can people follow you along? Because you're going to be one of those up-and-comers here on Identity. We're looking forward to following you.
Oh, I'm really excited. Thank you, Robert. I am on Facebook, dreambigkennel. if you, you know, search on Facebook, Dream Big Kennel is on my Facebook page. DreamBigKennel.com is my web page. And you can go ahead and like my Facebook page, you know, follow along. The web page is a little bit slow getting updated just because I can't do it from my phone. I travel a lot. So, I love comments. I love, you know, pictures of the team, of the dogs. Love to see those from people.
Awesome. And do you have any sponsors? Go ahead.
I do have several sponsors I'd like to thank. Alaska Excursions, I will be up in Skagway this year. They have been a huge support for me. Johnson Vinyl and Graphics. My friend Tim runs that down in Northwood, Iowa. He's printing sweatshirts and things for me. He's amazing. Frank's Auto. If anybody's followed my story, I know I need a good mechanic, and he's been amazing here in Newberry. And plus a ton of family and friends that have emotionally and, you know, supported me, plus a little bit of financial with sponsoring dogs and that type of thing through the season. Alcan Kennels, Al Hardman let me borrow some dogs to repair grease that I've been training for the last couple of years. So that was, you know, that's a huge sponsorship there as well.
Good stuff. Becky, it's great to catch up again. And when you're up here for Iditarod, we'll have you back on. How's that?
I would love it. I would love it. Thank you very much.
Very good. Becky Hacker, mid-distance musher, just finishing up the John Bear Grease Marathon in Minnesota just a couple of weeks ago. She will be up for Iditarod in 2018, as if all things work out. And that has a lot to do with Mother Nature. So we look forward to seeing you in the future. Becky, thank you again. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Yep, thank you, Robert. Have a good day.
On behalf of my guests today, we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.